Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. And with that, we go to our next guest, Teresa Labella. We just talked to her husband, John, who is a documentarian, and Teresa is a writer.
And she tells me she writes romances, and that led to a lively discussion about what a romance was.
Well, let me in on it. What is a romance?
Well, I'll let Teresa handle that and then lead into talking a little bit about her book and maybe read a passage from it.
Okay.
Well, the modern romance has got more of a formula to it. I think people are looking at it. Of course, it goes through conflict, just like any good story has to have good conflict, but then ends up wrapped up as happily ever after. That's sort of the really simplistic way of looking at romance. And what Roald and I were talking about was, what's the definition of romance? If you look at that, right, would it also include something like A Wuthering Heights or A Scarlet Letter or – And they very well could, Pride or Prejudice. And then you'd have the people saying, the real purists who are the traditionalists, who would say, oh, no, those are fine works of classic fiction. They're not romance novels, because they look at the romance novel as maybe being a little bit less than that, a lower form of genre. And there are some fantastic romance novels out there.
Did you set out to write a romance, or did it just sort of happen that it kind of felt like a romance?
Many writers will tell you that something just starts to speak to you, and it's usually the characters. Okay. I had no intention of writing a romance novel. My first attempt at writing a novel many years back, which I'm hopefully at some point in my career going to go back to, was actually science fiction and fantasy that had a bit of historic fiction to it. And for some reason, when I decided I was going to start writing again, the characters started to talk to me, and they were very definitely romance characters.
Well, there's The Romance of the Rose, a great medieval work, right, that would not fit our contemporary definition of romance. So I guess, the form is what you want to make it.
It is. And it was what originally started the whole thing. I tell this story. Of course, I'm a storyteller. That's what where you can find me on the web is Storyteller30. I was influenced by Jonathan Scott, who is one of the Scott Brothers and Property Brothers, because I love HGTV. I'm an HGTV fan. And there was an article in Dog Fancy magazine where he was interviewed, and the interviewer really picked up on this sadness, this loneliness that she felt from him. And what she was hearing was, here's this man who seems to have everything. He's incredibly good looking. He's making good money doing something that he loves to do. He's on television. He's somewhat of a celebrity. But yet he's very lonely because he hasn't found that person in his life that really completes him. So I started thinking about that. Well, that's a problem that most of us probably don't have. We're so incredibly good-looking and wealthy and all this kind of thing that, we're trying to find the person who sees us for us and not just wanting to attach on because of what we are and how good-looking we are. So that came about to being the character of Darian McKenna. And he's in the first book, and he really progresses through all three of the books that I'm now finishing out, the last of the trilogy. He is an uncomfortably good-looking chef, executive chef, at a high-end restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. He has his own television program, so he's doing all of that fame and fortune that way too. But yet he's looking for the woman who wants to know him for who he is, not to be the trophy, something mm-hmm. on that they can drag around and show off to mom and dad and all their friends and everything else. So he finds an older woman. She's 20 years older than he is. She's completely a self-made woman. She is a media consultant, owns her own company. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. She's been an editor at the New York Times. She knows who she is. She doesn't need him or anyone else to define her. And they have this romance called Reservations, which, of course, they have reservations about where this is going to go. There's this huge age difference, which can be a big cultural gap. But they have so much in common, and, of course, they also have a very passionate love affair going on, that it ends up in the happily ever after.
Read us a little something. From what book is this?
The book that I have is the second book, actually. This is Heartland. The story progresses from New York City, and there's a tragedy that then befalls this couple. And Darian ends up going off on his own.
Okay.
And he drives west, not really knowing where he's going, and he ends up in Iowa. So this is a little passage from Heartland, because he's trying to get on with his life, but yet he still has this cloud over him.
Okay.
And I could go into a whole big setup, but he's in this little cafe in this small, small town in Iowa. It's a fictional town, but does sort of exist. And those of us who have lived in the Midwest all our lives knows that mm-hmm. this is definitely reality. Days and weeks sped by, marked by autopilot runs on bland highways between restaurants in a dead heat towards the New Year's Eve finish line. Darian sought regular solace in the familiar clatter and hum of Hank's Longhorn Cafe. Buck topped up Darian's cup of coffee for a third time on a midweek late morning. "Mind if I ask something that's none of my business?" Darian looked up from the latest text message displayed on his phone. "What's on your mind?" "You've been in here just about every other day for over a month," he nodded toward the nearly full bowl of beef barley soup, "and I know you're not coming back for the food." Darian grinned at the big middle-aged man behind the counter. "Harmony is halfway between the restaurants I'm opening in Cedar Rapids and Dubuque." The big man's eyebrows arched up. "You own two restaurants?" "No, I'm working with the owner." "You a chef?" "I was years ago." "Oh, yeah? Whereabouts?" "Manhattan." Buck's eyebrows arched in surprise. "New York City?" Darian nodded. Buck looked down at the bowl again. "Sorry about the soup." Darian shrugged. "Hey, you work with what you've got." Buck wiped down the counter with his ever-present bar rag and shook his head. "It's a straight shot between Cedar Rapids and Dubuque on Highway 151, and it's a better road to boot. There's other places to squat and gobble, even here in Harmony. The Bar and Grill down the street serves up a pretty decent burger." "I prefer to grill my own." Darian's eyes scanned the restaurant windows for movement on the street. Buck checked his watch. "She won't be in for another half hour or so." "Excuse me?" Darian responded. Buck grunted. "Beans, it's not the food that brings you here. I wager it's the company you're wanting to keep." He leaned over the counter toward Darian. "I'm not sure which of the McCullough sisters has caught your eye, but if I were a betting man, my money'd be on Miranda." Darian frowned and straightened on the stool. "What makes you say that?" Buck stepped back and held up his hands. "Don't get me wrong. Doc Sam is a fine-looking filly, but there's not an available man in this town or the county who isn't interested in Miranda. And she's not interested in any man here." His steady gaze sized up Darian from his high-style urban attire to the face and form he watched women stare at and heard them giggle and buzz about in their sisterhood circles. "You're not from here, though." Buck whistled a long sigh through his teeth. And a man could get lost in those pretty eyes and that fiery hair.
Wow.
Where can someone get copies of these books?
They're available on Amazon.com.
Are they self-published? You did?
They are self-published by Labella Designs. You know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I started out trying to get an agent and do the traditional route and everything, and just decided I wasn't getting any younger, and I wanted to get my books published. So my husband, always the self-taught entrepreneur, went ahead and found out how we could publish our books online, get an ISBN number, the whole thing.
Well, self-publishing has undergone a revolution too. You know, it used to be you went to a vanity press and you ended up with a garage full of 1,500 copies of books, and a lot of writers have gone from traditional publishers back to self-publishing these days. I mean, it's because it has become a respectable part of the whole thing.
Well, and it's a way to, if you want to speed up the process, that's one thing. But
right.
It's also to keep your much more of the money for yourself, you know.
Or control the final product.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I know a friend of mine who no longer with us, but she had a publisher, but she said you can't make a living that way, so she decided to go into self-publishing toward the end of her life. And it makes a difference, since you get to keep a lot more money.
And there's also the myth that the publishing company is going to do all the marketing for you, and that's not true. The author still has to do a lot of their own promotion.
Yeah, it's a tough life. It really is. But it's true in anything that you do on your own. I mean, when you pursue a passion or an interest, maybe the market isn't right there for you, so you have to kind of create one.
But it's something you have to do. I found this out with writers, many people who follow their passion. When you ask them, well, you have so many obstacles and so many naysayers, why do you keep doing that? And the answer always is, well, I have to.
Yeah. Fortunately, I've never been driven to do anything.
Do you set aside a time each day to write? Or, I mean, how do you keep your – my problem is, you know, I will say, well, it's already Thursday and I need some more pencils. And so I guess Monday I'll really start writing. Yeah. And then something happens Monday. And
I hope you're more disciplined, Teresa.
You have to follow some kind of a discipline. What I do is I do try and set aside time, and I call Sundays are my day. It's just get out of my face. I'm going to write on Sundays.
Okay.
So I try to set a goal for myself of 1,000 words a day, which considering Jack London did 11,000, I think,
right. Wow.
You know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is. But I admire your discipline and devotion. You and John make an interesting pair, he with his documentaries and you with your books. And we would encourage you to keep right on going.
We will.
Okay. Well, we've used up our time with the two interviews today, so we're not going to do any book bagging, but you do have some recommendations you're saving up, haven't you, Roald?
You want me to do
it? No, I just want to be sure that next time
yes,
you're going
no,
to be
people
ready.
People are sending me books faster than I can read them. So.
Okay, good. Keep it up, folks. With that, we'll bring to a close this edition, but we'll be back next week. We hope you'll join Roald Tweet and me, Don Wooten, for another session of Scribble.